Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to our fans and listeners of WLSC AM and FM Loras Myrtle Beach. This is Dr. John, and welcome to the one only pro wrestling interviews. We've got the big crowd tonight. All of our fan favorites are here. I'll just go down the list. We've got, of course, superfan Malcolm Wildman. We've got Sinister, the Great Sinister. We've got the Professor of Wrestling, Steve Logan. We've got the one and only Todd Saxon. We've got, of course, our host, Adam Helms, and the great, the one and only, the greatest lady wrestler of all time, Susan Green. We are so glad to have each and every one of you here as we talk about our favorite thing, wrestling. So I will turn it over now to the great host, because Velvet has a hall pass for tonight. He had something to do. So the one and only, the only person that could replace him is Adam Helms. Adam, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, pretty good. Good weekend. Good, the weather's here good in Charleston. So the weather's good everywhere else. How's everything going for you, Dr. John?
It's going great. And you know, I was talking to Professor Wrestling Steve Logan this morning, and I said, I don't know what it is, but professional wrestling just gets me excited, and it just makes me happy. I can be down in the dumps, and you start talking about Susan Green, or start talking about Sinister, or Maestro, and I mean, it just makes me feel great, and I think it makes everybody feel good that's on this broadcast tonight, the co-hosts, and of course the listeners. So we just love what we're doing. We love professional wrestling, don't we, Adam?
That is absolutely true. And even before we went on the air, we were having such a great discussion that I think even the listeners should actually get involved with it. You know, we were talking about one of the greatest inside term sellers ever in the great Ricky Morton of the Rock and Roll Express. And that just gets you excited every time that, you know, even my dog's getting excited when I start talking about Ricky Morton and everything. I mean, he gets excited as well. But, you know, we talked about him just looking out in the crowd and just saying, help me. I mean, just how excited.
And then the great Susan Green says, he took a page out of my book because I did that too. Didn't you say that, Susan?
I did say that.
That's wonderful. And you know what, Susan? I got to say this every time I get to see – I've got to come down to Columbia this week and just see you, because I miss you so much. I think you're one of the most – you're truly one of the most exciting people in the world in professional wrestling. And, Sinister, I'm going to have to call you up and drop by and see you. I've never met you, but I know your work. And we're glad to have you on here. Would that be okay?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm going to get your number since I have the control room here, and I'll give you a call, and I'm going to come hang out with you a little bit, because you're pretty special, man. You and Maestro and L.A. Tank are just some of my very favorite people. And again, it just gets me excited. Adam, it just does. Continue, kind sir.
It absolutely does. It does. It gets you so excited. You know, wrestling is something that brings families together, brings, you know, just like you said, down in the dumps. You know, you get so excited when a match is coming up, or, you know, you see some of your favorite wrestlers or people that you actually call friends actually get into the ring. And, you know, you can get excited when you see people in there that you absolutely hate, because it gets your adrenaline going to yell at them, to tell them how they're the worst people in the world. But, I mean, that's the connection that wrestlers have with their fans and with everyone. You know, we always call each other brothers or sisters in this business, and it truly is a family, just like, you know, the fans are family to everyone else. You know, you reach out and you touch them. Good thing COVID's up, so now you can actually get closer to the fans, where they almost can touch you, but you got to be careful. Some of them might swing on you and hit you. I've had a few times where some of them almost hit me. You know, so Sinister, I don't know if that's ever happened to you, or Susan, has that ever happened to you at any time?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Overseas, I've been swung out in a time or two.
It's just awesome, you know, to hear the stories of everything that's going on. And, you know, we started talking about Ricky Morton. Susan, in your time, you know, you had some television exposure during that time, not as much as everyone has these days. How was selling, you know, when you were wrestling? How important was it at that time?
If you couldn't do anything else, you better know how to sell. If you didn't sell, it was going to get broken. So you were going to be breaking an arm and a leg. You were going to know how to sell it because something was going to get hurt. So, but most of the time, the ladies that I was involved with training, I would take them out for 5 or 6 hours and tell them, and they said, when you go home, I said, bend your finger back and look at yourself in the mirror. And when it don't hurt, don't make a face. But the minute it starts hurting, make a little bit of face that it hurts. When it really hurts, make a bigger face that it hurts. And then remember what kind of face you made, you know. That got them to doing what they're doing, because a lot of the girls – that we worked, if you didn't sell, they were going to hook you show you and hurt you, you know, because you go back and you get the Penny Banners and the June Byers and the Mildred Burks. They knew how to hook you and hurt you. And I wrestled them ladies. I actually worked for Mildred Burke for 3 months, and whenever, you know, she wasn't able to get any openings up other than Japan and Mexico, and I went back to Lillian, and said that, you know, and surprisingly, she took me back, but she knew that I was a hot item for everybody wanting me, but Mildred told me that, you know, she could only send me to Japan and Mexico. And I said, well, I want to go more than Japan and Mexico. And that was the only contacts that Mildred had, because Lillian had already got all the contacts for all the other, for all the states and all of Canada and the other states. But I sit there and said that I wanted to do a little more. You know, so I went back. I'd worked for Mula for 4 years and then went for Mildred for 4 months. But, I did get the whole Mildred Burke West Coast NWA championship belt, because she called Mike Mazurki and said, could she put it on me? And he asked her, would I defend it like she did? And she said, by all means, you know, Miss Green will not let the belt be taken from her. And, of course, we got into Mexico, and I was only there for one match, and said, well, you know, you're going to drop the belt. And I said, Mike Mazurki didn't say I was dropping the belt. And I said, Mildred didn't say I was going to drop the belt. And they said, well, you are. And I said, well, I'm not. And I said, oh, well, I'll tell you this. If you can take it, you can have it. But you're not going to take it. You know, and they would start off trying, and then thank God for Danny Hodge and the other guys that taught me to do what I know and shoot and hooking, that whenever they started throwing stuff, I just hooked them and sat there and said, get out of it now. No. Then I have to say, just let me go. And I said, well, we can sit here for another 20 minutes if you want. I'll give up, whichever choice you want to take, but I ain't letting you up.
I love it. And we actually got our first questions. Steve, you got a question there, bro?
Yeah, question for Miss Green. I wanted to ask, did you ever work with Rockin' Robin Smith? She was recently in Dark Side of the Ring series.
I did. I had her very first match up in Fort Worth, Texas, in Wild West Wrestling. Very well trained. She was trained by Nelson Royal and knew what she needed to know. just her nervousness by not knowing all the moves and not knowing whenever you had somebody doing something that you know,
yeah.
when she had me in a position that she could have taken advantage of me, she'd back off and give me time. And it was like, and of course, when I got her back to discipline, I said, don't ever back off when you got somebody like that. Because I actually did not know who Rockin' Robin was until Marcia and Mike and Nikolai and Grizzly come walking in the dressing room, and I said, what are y'all doing here? And they says, Robin. And I went, oh, my God. I can remember bouncing her on my knee when she was a little bitty thing. But Nelson Royal taught her very well on counters and moves, you know. But she was, you know, did it for what she wanted to and got out. You know, she decided that she wanted to go into real estate, and I'm sure there's more money there than what we make.
Yeah, I'm glad I asked, because I didn't know Jake's family was in heavily into wrestling as much as they were, so I'm glad I could ask about Robin.
Yeah. Well, Robin, the minute she got out of the wrestling, she opened up a real estate company. She went from New Orleans down to Baton Rouge to New Orleans, and when Karina hit, the only thing she got out of the Katrina hurricane was her car. When she was looking in her trunk, she had the WWF belt. Whenever they gave her, she had no time to get anything out of the house, and her house got washed away. And then she went up in the central Louisiana, and then found the house back down in Baton Rouge that she wanted, and went back to Baton Rouge. But
one question that I have, since Steve brought it up, Susan, have you had a chance to watch any of the Dark Side of the Ring episodes?
I watched the Dark Side that they had on Mula. I wasn't involved in that part of the section. It came after the girls from the 70s. You could have a drink if you was 12 years old, you know.
Right.
But she was dead set about you having any kind of drugs, you know, anything, you know, whether the marijuana or piece of speed. And I sat there and said, you know, I'd be the only driver with three girls in the car and not one of them able to drive. And she'd say, well, you're going to leave California, you're going to leave South Carolina, and you got to be in Los Angeles in 3 days. And it's like, and I got to drive? I said, and y'all get to take turns sleeping? And it's like, oh, my God. The doctor out there, Dr. Schwartz, he was really good to make, you know.
The reason I ask that is, like, there have been so many of them that have been done before, like on the Montreal Screwjob, on the Von Erich family, you know, recently Brian Pillman. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on, you know, the actual television show of them actually exposing or actually digging deep down and showing, just like the name of the show, the dark side of professional wrestling.
Side, they ain't got the dark side, because I beat Mula flat squaring out, and she had to scream out, "I quit." Yeah, and that was before.
Exactly.
And we had a special referee, and whenever we I'm sure the Von Erichs sold it to Vince, so I'm not sure that that tape would still be around. Mula had to actually say, "I quit," and I wouldn't let her go till she was screaming it loud enough to the very top of the sportatorium there in Dallas that everybody could hear what she was saying. And poor Mike Mazurki, he was a referee, and he says, "She said she quit." And I said, "What?" She said, "What? What'd she say?" just made her keep saying it, and if she didn't say it louder, I just pushed a little harder to make us make it get a little louder.
just checking to make sure she really did say it.
To
add on what Adam was saying, there's also A&E documentary series called Biography, and they've been covering WWE wrestlers on there too. It's interesting how many documentaries are coming out lately.
Yeah, those I've seen some of those, and they've been really good. You know, A&E's done it, but you can tell that A&E is under the close supervision of the WWE, so you probably won't get
right.
the full story as much as, you know, Dark Side of the Ring is doing and everything right now. But you know, we got so many people on the line. Hey Todd, how you doing tonight, man?
Oh, I'm doing good. The man, how you been, brother? Just on that, we haven't had a chance. We didn't have any green room BS time.
That's true. I'm doing good, man. Running some shows here in South Carolina and everything, trying to get fans back in. But yeah, we're doing actually pretty good. One of the topics that actually came up before we were going on to the show, and also now we're talking about Dark Side of the Ring. We also were talking about Ricky Morton. Do you have any comments on Ricky Morton, or, you know, any funny stories about him?
Actually, just my side, it was so hit and miss up north growing up, trying to see some of the different wrestling regions and stuff like that. But when we did get to see Rock and Roll Express as a whole, it was their impact on the tag teams that were to come. I don't think we would have seen the Rockers in WWF at the time, things like that. Or not the Rockers, but what the heck? Yeah, were they were called the Rockers, Shawn Michaels, and old boy.
Yeah. Martin,
the Midnight Rockers.
And they were AWA, and then
yeah. It's the impact on that kind of stuff, the brightness, the style, all that. I think... You know, maybe I missed some of how good Ricky Morton was, some of his little things. I haven't gone back and rewatched a lot of his old stuff. But just their impact about what's to happen in the future of tag teams. And I think tag teams are lost art. I just really do.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
I mean, we had some outrageous
tag teams. You don't ever see the mixed
tags
like you used to see.
No, you don't see the mixed tag teams as you used to.
They were doing like a social media type tournament with mixed tag teams, but they haven't been doing that lately.
In my day and age, you went out and had a single match, and the guys went out and had a single match, and then you went back in a mixed tag. So you work twice on the card. And then if they wanted to have the women put the belts up, you had a single match against each one of the champions, and then you went back in a women's tag team champion. So they were making sure they got all the work out of the girls that they could get whenever we were in town, because being a girl, we were only in that territory for 1 or 2 weeks. You know, we were – left South Carolina, going to Georgia, going from Georgia to Alabama, from Alabama to Oklahoma. Unless Lillian decided to leave South Carolina and go straight to Los Angeles, like she did many a time.
Where was your favorite place to wrestle?
The only driver.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Favorite place to wrestle, like Adam said.
I didn't hear you.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, Adam was saying favorite place to wrestle. I was going to ask favorite state to wrestle.
Okay.
Favorite state?
Mm-hmm.
Favorite state to work.
I like working the Oklahoma Territory for Leroy McGurk. I mean, we had some long trips, but it was so much fun. I mean, everybody was driving, and I could switch off and have some of the guys ride with me to make the drive back, because we'd have to be up at 8 o'clock to be down at the TV station to do interviews and everything. So if we left Baton Rouge to get back to Tulsa or Shreveport, it was like 8 hours, and we'd be getting in at 6 or 7 o'clock, and they'd want us out on TV at 9, you know. And I guess the worst place with Canada, you know. Vancouver wasn't bad, but Calgary, you had some horrible road trips. Regina was 500 miles from Calgary, and the minute you had your match, you didn't care about getting a shower or nothing. You just grabbed some sweatpants, jumped in a sweatshirt, and jumped in the car, got that 500-mile trip back, and hoped the county, the Royal Mounted Police didn't catch you, because you had to be down at the stadium at 9 o'clock. If you got there at 9 o'clock, you got hollered at, but if you got there at 8 o'clock, it was good. But I sit there and said, we were getting hollered at because we were a little slower on getting up.
Yeah, I can imagine. In your time when you were in Canada, did you ever go by the Hart family home or work with Stu at any time?
Did not work with Stu. Went by and he had a group down in the dungeon and walked down and sit there and said, I think it's time for us to leave. We got to be in another territory. So we wasn't hanging around.
I believe you. Yeah, I've heard a lot. Everyone's heard a lot of stories about the Hart family dungeon. He just loved how to stretch people. I wish we could get some footage of actually seeing that. I know there's some videos out there, but yeah. We talked about a little bit about mixed tag wrestling, and it kind of segues into what actually happened earlier in the week. Last Sunday was Double or Nothing for AEW, but also announced earlier in the week with the WWE, there's a bunch of releases, and three of the biggest names that were released were Braun Strowman, Aleister Black, and Lana. Speaking of mixed tag teams, could we possibly see a Miro and Lana versus Cody Rhodes and Brandi once she comes back from having her baby?
Very likely.
Anyone want to weigh in?
Yeah, I think that would be interesting for sure. Lana and Miro were a good duo in WWE tag match. Like, I think AEW wanted to do a mixed tag with Cody and Brandi versus Shaq and Jay, but Brandi got pregnant, so that got canceled and Red Velvet. So, I mean, AEW has been doing mixed tag team matches, but for pay-per-view or I guess like a special match on TV, like the Shaq match. So, yeah, I could definitely see that happening later down the line, because he can still challenge for the TNT title after or sometime around that.
So I've had the discussion with a few other people about some people were offended that Cody used the American Dream moniker last Sunday. How do y'all feel about it? You think it was an honor to do it from his father, or do you think he should have just left it alone, even though he's being called the American Nightmare?
I don't have an issue with it. We all know how he was close to his dad, so I think it's fair use. I think a lot of the fans are turning on him lately because his recent promo, which I thought was okay. I don't think it was really bad. And then him beating Anthony Ogogo. But I hope that the Cody factor here can win people over, because it seems like people were not happy with Cody beating Ogogo on the pay-per-view. But he recently lost to QT with a tag match.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's over yet. I think Ogogo will get a win on Cody pretty soon in the singles.
You know, we have other people on the panel tonight. We've heard from Todd. We've heard from Steve. Let's hear from the greatest fan, Malcolm Wildman. Malcolm Mania.
I'm not going to accept that, Adam. You have more wrestling knowledge. You could forget more than I could learn. So I'm just going to say I'm the best wrestling fan I could be.
There you go.
Like the Raider fan I was. I don't want to disrespect anybody. Susan, I have one thing to say to you. Thank you so much for that picture you signed for me of you and the American Dream Dusty Rhodes on May 15th. That was so nice of you. And my question for you is this. You mentioned Mike Mazurki at the Cult Valley Club. I found out Mike Mazurki was not only an actor in Hollywood in the 60s, but he was also a wrestler, and that really shook me up. I saw Cesar Romero at the Cult Valley Club, picture of him. He played the Joker on Batman, and that's my all-time favorite TV show. Mike Mazurki was one of the henchmen with Joan Collins when she played the Siren in Season 3, and Cliff Osmond, the actor, was the other henchman. And I just want to know, what was it like to work with Mike Mazurki, because I would have loved to meet anybody when I was a kid that was on Batman. I mean, I got into wrestling because I watched Batman and the Three Stooges fight scenes, and then me and my sister accidentally watched wrestling on Saturday morning.
Well, Mike was the referee for the match that was called a double main event against. We were the first main event going out, me and Moolah, and they wanted us to go 45 minutes. And then Dory Funk was going to be wrestling Junior. We were going to be wrestling Ivan Putski, and they were going to be going an hour.
Yeah, Ivan Putski, the Polish
power. Darren said that I could do it, but Moolah reached up, and the reason I ended up hooking her in that match because she slapped me. Well, we were not standing at the center of the ring like we used to do. They didn't announce us before we got to the ring. They announced us when we was in the ring, and we walked to the center of the ring for the referees to give us the instructions. When we got to the center of the ring, she got the instructions, and as she started to turn around, she slapped me. When my head snapped back and Mike was standing there, I just sat there and said, "Beat me if you can." And Mike said he knew then that it was going to be an all-out fight. He didn't know when it was going to start, but he knew that it was going to be an all-out fight. And for 21 minutes, I did what she wanted to do.
And
about 22-23, I ended up hooking her in the death lock. And she looked at Mike and asked how much longer, and I went, "Oh, about 23. And Mike told her, "Yeah, that's it." Well,
Susan, also, did you ever do any acting? Because I talked to Lindsay Wagner, who was a bionic woman, and in Season 2, she did an episode about females wrestling. I'm just wondering if you were considered to do a role in there.
No, I wasn't considered to do a role in there. When I was over in Hong Kong,
actresses and wrestlers. So.
There was a movie being produced over in Hong Kong, and they picked up me and Sandy Parker to do basically a walk-in, making the guy look like he was floating, and we took it the wrong way, and I ended up picking him up in a body slam and slamming him into the water. But it was over in Hong Kong where we did that.
Oh, and one more thing, Susan. One more thing real quick. I have this Batman movie poster from 1966, and hardly anybody's still alive. So I made a vow to myself, wrestlers are the closest things to real-life villains or heroes. I would be honored if I get this poster out here, if you would sign it for me, please.
Definitely. You bring it the next time you see me, and I'll sign it for you.
I got to get it out here first to my storage in
okay.
Las Vegas.
But one person we really haven't heard from tonight, Sinister, you still with us, buddy?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here. Yeah.
Anything you want to comment on anything we talked about tonight so far?
I know this guy's talking about Ricky Morton and you know, how he's really like Democrat into it. Well, I have two funny memories about Ricky Morton. One was a childhood memory where I used to see him and his partner, you know, when he used to fight for Midnight Express. And they were always good at the doctor. So, you know, I was good and I would tie bandanas around my leg. And my brother was always outside. So when he went looking, I hopped up on the picnic table, ran and did a drop kick on him. So, you know, I wanted to be like Ricky Morton. And that was probably one of the worst things I ever done in my life. So my brother beat me through. I couldn't even stand. So I was kind of a little sore at Ricky about that. And then later on, a couple of years, decades later, he was in a tag team match. And, you know, we were tag team, we were fighting, I forgot who those guys were. And we would jump around in the ring, and Ricky thought that the ring didn't have any patents, and I was trying to tell him it was just the corner. So when the match started, I would go to Ricky to do a tag, he would lean back. And I was like, what you doing? Never would get in the ring, and I was fighting two guys at the same time. And finally, you know, he got in the ring, and come to find out later, he thought the ring didn't have any pattern. So, you know, I like to say that I had good memories, and I was crazy working with him. And one thing before I go, one thing I've been wanting to say, somebody on the panel, I do owe them a very great big apology. And I wish I would have listened to this person and took their advice. And I just want them to know at the time that, you know, I was kind of hot and mad because a lot of people kept referring to me as, you know, a Hollywood looking type guy. And I should have took their advice, and that person is Susan Green. And she came to a show with Judy, and they told me if it fits all the music, just let myself get ahead. And Susan, I might say I'm sorry, and I wish I would have listened to you. I should have taken your advice, and maybe that would have helped me out in my career.
Dude, you humble us every week when you're here, I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, so we talked about a lot of things today, and, you know, we talked about Ricky Morton, and we talked about some mixed tag teams. But let's jump into some – one of the things that popped in my head when I found out that I was going to – you know, have an open discussion tonight. When Velvet called me and asked me to do this, well, one of the things that popped in my head, and I guess it's because I just got done watching The Dark Side of the Ring, the Nick Cage, the Deathmatch Wrestler. I wanted to know everyone's opinion on, like, I had a discussion with Malcolm earlier today about the difference between hardcore wrestling, but we've had it in the old, you know, in the territory days, they were called, you know, a Texas Death Match, or you had a Bull Rope match that, you know, became very
right.
bloody, but then the name of hardcore came about. The name of hardcore and death match now is totally different from what it used to be. Do you think the death match is just an evolution of what's happened in the wrestling business, or do you think death match is just people that can't wrestle and they just going to beat each other up with light tubes and everything? Anybody wants to jump in and comment on it?
I think it's both of those comments that you were making earlier. Terry Funk, Mick Foley, Omida kind of popularized it in Japan, and Terry Funk, Jerry Lawler type hardcore matches kind of, you know, inspired Omida. And, you know, just FMW was popular in Japan, even though they were the third brand, and then ECW kind of took influence from FMW. So I think a lot of it goes back to Terry Funk and barbed wire matches that would, you know, happen in Japan. Mm-hmm. And lately, Omida has revamped FMW and has started doing barbed wire explosion matches, so... I think there is a lot of deathmatch wrestlers that are that rely too much on weapons and not even working, but there's guys that can do both, like Sabu and Foley and Funk, you know, the old school guys. So it just depends on what you're looking for and who's working, you know, with the deathmatch style they're working. So the Nick Gage episode of Dark Side of the Ring, I thought was really interesting, because they had John Moxley on there, and David Arquette was interviewed. So I really liked those interviews. I think Nick Gage is a little bit crazy to be cutting people's mouths without their consent. I think he's a little bit
unfair.
Yeah, the pizza cutter. But other than that, it was a really interesting episode, because I didn't know his whole backstory about him getting helicoptered out, and I didn't know all the details about the bank robbery, so... It was a crazy story. I really enjoyed Moxley and Arquette. But, Adam, I'll let you give it to anybody else. So I believe there's more comments on it.
Hey, Adam. I talked to David Arquette about that a long time ago, last year when that premiere came out. And I watched that movie live at the drive-in theater in La Puente, California, August 21st on Friday night. And I was sitting in my car. And I could not believe, I told Dave, I could not believe the torture you went through just to save your face for some wrestling fans that wouldn't care about you if you did it anyway, you know, just to make yourself popular, go down to Mexico, go to those wrestling schools, you know, practically get yourself killed. He was in a hospital. He almost died. His wife was with him. You know, it's just, you know, I had a drill sergeant basic training, Drill Sergeant Royston. He served in Vietnam, and he told us in a group, he said, if you don't have experience in anything, then don't get involved. He said, if you learn, if you have somebody step up and do it for you, or you learn how to do it and then take on the challenge. So it's just, you know, I can't believe that, you know, Dave's my best friend. You know, you're my best friend, too. I told people I can have as many best friends in the world as I want, and you guys are two of them, you know. But I just couldn't believe that he went through all that just because a bunch of stupid replies that those dumb wrestling fans did. And then, to you know, Dave wanted to make good with them. He went back and bought, you know, memorabilia, merchandise from those jerks. I wouldn't have paid him a penny after some... if they'd have put me through that stuff.
You can't help with that. But I think, was it Sinister? Were you jumping in trying to say something, buddy?
Sorry, Sinister.
I was just looking.
No, it was me. Good evening, everybody.
Oh,
how
no,
you doing?
Okay. Speaking of...
Yeah,
you,
I've been
kind of
sitting back, listening.
Okay. This is Deathmatch Wrestling. There's Deathmatch going on. That's what
the
ambulance is
going on. Yeah, I got an ambulance going by my house. But the answer to that question, I agree with what was said earlier. because I have competed in hardcore matches and like a dummy. And I'd be the first to say that. The ones I competed in, I would say it was more built towards a story due to the type of feud I was in. Some of it was designed to draw the fans' attention, but I can tell you myself competing in them, you know, I never occurred it to the level some of these new guys is doing it now, like, you know, and I think they're doing it for the attention. But I do agree, it's depending on, one, who you got in the match with you, and two, can they work the match? Because you got a lot of guys that cannot work, and I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not kicking nobody. They can get in the ring, take a simple bump, more or less hit somebody properly with a damn chair or a light bulb. But, you know, you do got some guys, if you got guys that can literally do both, can work in and out in, you know, in the business in a regular match and be able to work a what they call a hardcore match and work it well, and that's the key thing, is working the match well. I mean, anybody can get in there and hit somebody, you know, if they got the common sense to know how to do it, but you got to know how to work it, you know, while trying to kill your partner. Because one day I was learning this business, your opponent is your partner. Y'all can sit and kick each other behind all day long, and but you don't kick you to the point where you might got to go to the next town and do it all over again. And I know one of my best dance, my last dance partner was obvious, everybody knew was Stro. And me and Stro, we went literally up the whole entire, up and down the whole entire East Coast for 3 years beating each other up. And it was just to the point where, you know, we never did nothing too much extreme. I think the extreme much as we did was maybe chairs and a cage match. But I'll be the first to tell you, I think the worst out of all my hardcore matches, my last two was fans bring your own weapons match. And I'm going to tell you now, that promoter, I literally cussed at him and threatened to beat him in the ring because I told him, don't you ever give a mock. And excuse my anybody in this on this phone call will understand why I still live by the old tradition. You never give a mock an option to interject yourself in a ring with two professionals because at the end of the day, they are a mock. They are a mock that get paid to be a mock. Well, they pay us, but you know, they don't understand the concept of that. And I had one mock. Me and my opponent, we had one and literally came in through the door with a freaking hatchet and a machete. And of course the cop, you know, grabbed that person at the door. Good thing we had police there that night. And he wound up being arrested. And their biggest thing was, well, it was a fans bring your own weapons match. And, you know, I think he learned from that promoter, learned that night, you know, sometimes it's good to try to advertise and try to push a match, but it's sometimes you got to use a little common sense when you're dealing with mock, because they don't know, they really don't know at all. So you know, and I think that was the first one. That one I wound up, oh my god, I sat at home for 2 days after that match. I actually went over in the match, but I literally sat at home for 2 days, actually 3 days from that match. I mean, I probably got hit with everything from a computer keyboard to a kitchen sink to a cinder block in the head to crutches, wheelchair. Hell, I ain't got hit with a toilet tank bowl.
Wow. Kitchen sink.
That one set me at home for a couple of days. And the next worst one, and I don't know why I did it, and I did two matches on that, and I kind of laugh about it now. I think I kind of wanted to tell the story so bad. I competed in a barbed wire serpentine wire match, which it consists of the three ropes is encased in barbed wire. Each rope is in, you know, basically individually wrapped in barbed wire. Then in between the barbed wire is serpentine razor wire like you see in prisons. That's wrapped in between the barbed wire.
You were so dumb. Please tell me you didn't do that.
I did two of the matches. I came out with a good payday, but I think
you better have a good payday.
Yeah, well, actually,
you look at the razor wire and it'll cut you.
Yeah,
I am actually in the two total matches in between the two, and they were like 3 months apart. I lost, I guess, a whole set of gear and a half. I lost the top and the bottom, and I lost the top on the second match. And I think a total, I came out of the match with 225 stitches combined.
Well,
I'd be the first to tell you.
How does someone sell you on that match? Answer that. How does someone sell you on that match? Going, oh, by the way, we're going to wrap the ropes in barbed wire and also have razor wire hanging from the side. How does someone sell
you
on that?
Truthfully, this promoter that we dealt with, he was kind of a type of promoter. If you know how to work, he'll give you an idea of what he wanted for a finish. But the problem me and him had was me and this one guy was doing so much that we wanted to change it up. And he was totally against the match, honestly. The promoter really was totally against the match. And we and the other fellow, and pretty much I call his name. His name is Clyde Hurst, better known in the wrestling business as Viper. We wanted to do something different. And, you know, Viper's just as big as I am. And when you got two big guys literally beating the hell out of each other, beat each other with chairs and everything, tables and you name it. Hell, even golf clubs, you know, they hurt like a son of a gun. I ain't going to be the first to tell you right now. They really do hurt real bad. I think I'd rather take a kendo stick than a golf club. But we wanted to do something different because we was kind of stagnated and bored with the program. And when we first mentioned it, it came up, actually another person came up with it. And we both sat there and thought about it. It was like, well, fuck it. Well, I mean, we looked at it like, anyway, at this point, we'll beat each other with everything. Why not? And we did the first one, and we both was kind of like, you know, what the hell were we thinking, deal? But then we did the second one, and the second one was the end of the story of the program. And honestly, really, the promoter did not like it. He really, but we actually had to talk him into it. But we really did it, and we did it for ourselves to make a thing for ourselves. And we thought it was a good thing at the time. And honestly, you know, I'll be the first to say, when you got youthness, when you're young, you're eager to do all kinds of crazy stuff, sometimes for, you know, for programs and exposure, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, I couldn't ask for a better dance partner to do the match with. You know, I think more or less our families was more pissed off about it than we were. Put it that way. Because he had to deal with the aftermath of it. You know, his family had to deal with him. My family had to deal with me. And it was a learning experience, you know, other than doing a regular hardcore match. But the main thing, like I said, to answer the question, is just today's hardcore matches is nowhere near, because they don't really tell a story. You just got guys just going in there and doing crazy stuff. And, you know, it's just like in the average match, you got to tell a story. I mean, you got guys these days don't tell a story. Everybody want to go in there, something like you from the circus. But, you know, only thing you telling the story is, yeah, I'm acrobatic. You know, but why is you acrobatic? You know, and the same thing was with the hardcore matches. When I watched the hardcore matches, you know, or the bull rope matches, or the tape fish matches, or the wrecking crane matches, it was always a rift there in between the heel and the baby face. Man, you got guys just, like you said, you go out here with fresh and buffs, and, you know, it's one thing for me at the time to compete in a barbed wire, serpentine wire match, something that will cut the hell out you. But it's another thing when you got fluorescent tubes and the stuff that's inside of the fluorescent tubes. You know, that's a whole other level, you know.
I think
One of my favorite hardcore matches in recent years was Vampiro, Pentagon, and that obviously went to an extreme and had life tubes. But like you said, a good hardcore or a death match needs more storytelling, and I really like the storytelling in the Vampiro, Pentagon match in Lucha Underground. I thought that was a good example of a good hardcore match with the commentary really selling the drama of the match.
See, just LA Tank?
Add on to what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
LA Tank, I just want to tell
you,
sir. It was a pleasure to meet you, but if you were a wrestler and I was a fan, I wouldn't ask you to do anything more than a cage match. A cage match was enough for me. I used to watch WCW, and then they introduced on Nitro these hardcore matches where they had, like, trash can lids and all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, I remember the Bunkhouse Stampede matches and the War Games. You know, that was extreme for me. You know, I wouldn't ask you guys as a fan to do any of that crazy stuff. Just doing the basic wrestling holds and giving me, working out in the gym, giving me the best performances a wrestler that you could give would be enough for me and still my respect for you.
I appreciate that, you know. But it just, you have to be in the business to kind of understand what I'm saying. I mean, not that I'm saying you're not. It's just when you get out there, the first thing, and I don't know how guys is being taught now, but the first thing is drilled in your head when you know. I was drilled in my head when I first got into the business was, one, learn my craft. Two, learn my office. My office was the ring. And three, get much exposure as you can within common sense ring. And I kind of enjoyed it.
LA Tank,
you know, there. You're set.
A joke, LA Tank. Your office was the ring. Fonzie. Henry Winkler with the bathroom on Happy Day.
Yeah, that's always every wrestler's ring. I mean, you got a lot of guys that get into their office and doesn't know it. And, you know, I'm glad you got people out here like Susan. I know, I much as I've joked with Susan and I've heard about Susan's school, I commend Susan all the way 100% for being a tough trainer because it makes them want to earn it. And if you don't want to earn it, and you just want to hand it to you, you're in this business for the wrong reason. And I know you're on here, mm-hmm. Susan, and much as I've heard about your school, shit, girl, I'm so proud of you for you doing what you're doing because no matter how much of the business has been exposed, I'm listening to what y'all are saying. Yeah, because I've been following this dark side of the ring and the biographies. Like, I know you got it going.
Well,
hey, you're surprised. We're at 6 minutes and change.
He knows
yeah.
When to exit curtain.
So my ring, you can take bumps on the asphalt or the concrete because that's about how soft my ring is.
Oh, damn. That's the ring I'm talking about.
You're like the Miz. You're awesome, LA Tank.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. But I'm nobody than nobody else. I just get in there and do what I do, bro. That's it. You know, like right now, I got a couple of phone calls I'm going to be talking to Adam about. But I got some things that's here. It looks like he's here to open up for me because my phone been ringing off the hook since this COVID thing has hit up. And I got some that's probably going to be putting me on Fight TV by September. I don't know. But I'm going to sit back and see. But, you know.
Right.
I've enjoyed listening to you guys. You know, of course, I've always been a ghost. I just be quiet until my time that I think you need to talk. But, you know, y'all go right ahead. And I appreciate y'all listening to me, though. I really do.
Of course, man. You know, I can talk to you forever. You know that.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, plenty of
work. Yeah, it's just, man, so sad that, Velvet couldn't make it in here tonight. You know, he definitely would have enjoyed tonight's conversation and everything. You know, just like Todd said, we were about a little over 5 minutes away from the show being over with. So I want to go around and if you want to plug anything, if you want to make any comments. First off, let's go right to Senator. Don't you have an MMA fight coming up like in July or August?
Yeah, July the 24th. So I'm still getting prepared for that. So
Where is it going to be at?
It's going to be in actually Columbia. Well, they call it Columbia County, but it's going to be in the Columbia County Auditorium in Alton Evans. So they're still getting things together for that. And the name of the tournament is called New Breed. So it's basically a grappling tournament.
Very nice. Me and Velvet might have to take a trip up there to see that. You know, we're all down here in Charleston, so we take a little road trip up there to see it, support you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. John might join you.
Yeah, that sounds good, too, Dr. John. More than welcome.
Absolutely.
You know, can you handle being in the car with me and Velvet for 2.5 hours or something like that? We're a trip.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Malcolm, do you have anything that you want to add before we're out of here in about 4 minutes?
Yeah, real quick. I hope you don't mind this, Adam, but I was just watching the Green Hornet Batman, so I got to get this out. Holy wrestling. Wrestling tonight. I got to say that. We're doing retro. We did it on Thursday about Hulk Hogan. And my other favorite, all-time favorite wrestler this Thursday, Papa Stroh's doing Rowdy Roddy Piper, so I'm all excited about that. And I just want to tell the wrestlers, Susan Green and L.A. Tank, and all the panelists, it's an honor to be a part of this show. But most of all, it's an honor because I spent over 10 years in the U.S. Army, and you don't want to give me a handset or a headset for a telephone or a radio, you know, because I'll just talk your ears off. It's an honor to listen to your sides of the story.
There you go, buddy. There you go. Hey, Malcolm, we're gonna have to keep moving real quick. Todd, is there anything you want to add or say anything?
Big love, big hugs. Be safe. Be smart. Take care of one another. Next.
Professor, you got anything to say, buddy?
Yeah, looking forward to New Japan's Dominion event tomorrow morning at sometime around 5 a.m. Right now, there's a boxing fight going on. Logan Paul, Floyd Mayweather. Obviously, Floyd's going to win, but Logan's got the weight advantage. So, exciting times, exciting events going on. So, thanks for having me on and talking about wrestling.
Awesome. And I'm just going to say real quick, next Sunday night at 7 o'clock, at Nisi Highway in Orangeburg, South Carolina. I'm promoting AWS Unfinished Business. Come see me. Come see the Amazing Velvet. Come see Reginald Vanderhoff. We'll all be in person. And the main event is the Anomaly, Antonio Morgan versus Chris Vallo. Come on out. Everything's $10 at the door. Dr. John, the rest is yours.
All right. Well, thank you. This has been absolutely a wonderful show. It's been good to hear from everybody, all the great wrestlers. And, we cut it out with 29 seconds to go. So thanks a lot. We'll see you next week right here on WLSC AM and FM, Loris Myrtle Beach, the World Wide Web. And come join us again next week. Same time, same bat time, same bat channel, Malcolm.
Yes!
For Pro Wrestling Interview. Take care, everybody. Have a great week.
Okay. All right. Love y'all, guys.
Bye-bye. 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 Thank you. Bye-bye.